The Lannisters are not. Lord Renly turned away and went back across the moat to the tower where his brother lay dying. By the time Ned returned to his chambers, he felt weary and heartsick. Yet there was no question of his going back to sleep, not now. When you play the Game of Thrones, you win or you die, Cersei Lannister had told him in the Godswood. He found himself wondering if he had done the right thing by refusing Lord Renly's offer. He had no taste for these intrigues, and there was no honour in threatening children. And yet, if Cersei elected to fight rather than flee, he might well have need of Renly's 100 swords, and more besides. "I want Littlefinger," he told Kane. "If he's not in his chambers, take as many men as you need and search every wine sink and whorehouse in King's Landing until you find him. Bring him to me before break of day." Kane bowed and took his leave, and Ned turned to Tomar. "The Wind Witch sails on the evening tide. Have you chosen the escort?"
10 men with Porter in command.
20, and you will command," Ned said. Porter was a brave man, but headstrong. He wanted someone more solid and sensible to keep watch over his daughters.
"As you wish, my lord," Tom said. "Can't say I'll be sad to see the back of this place. I miss the wife."
"You will pass near Dragonstone when you turn north. I need you to deliver a letter for me." Tom looked apprehensive.
"To Dragonstone, my lord?"
The island fortress of House Targaryen had a sinister repute. "Tell Captain Koss to hoist my banner as soon as he comes in sight of the island. They may be wary of unexpected visitors. If he is reluctant, offer him whatever it takes. I will give you a letter to place into the hand of Lord Stannis Baratheon. No one else. Not his steward, not the captain of his guard, nor his lady wife, but only Lord Stannis himself."
"As you command, my lord."
When Tomard had left him, Lord Eddard Stark sat staring at the flame of the candle that burned beside him on the table. For a moment, his grief overwhelmed him. He wanted nothing so much as to seek out the Godswood, to kneel before the Heart Tree, and pray for the life of Robert Baratheon, who had been more than a brother to him. Men would whisper afterwards that Eddard Stark had betrayed his king's friendship and disinherited his sons. He could only hope that the gods would know better, and that Robert would learn the truth of it in the land beyond the grave. Ned took out the king's last letter, a roll of crisp white parchment sealed with golden wax, a few short words, and a smear of blood. How small the difference between victory and defeat, between life and death. He drew out a fresh sheet of paper and dipped his quill in the inkpot. "To His Grace Stannis of the House Baratheon," he wrote, "by the time you receive this letter, your brother Robert, our king these past 15 years, will be dead. He was savaged by a boar whilst hunting in the king's wood." The letters seemed to writhe and twist on the paper as his hand trailed to a stop. Lord Tywin and Sir Jaime were not men to suffer disgrace meekly. They would fight rather than flee. No doubt Lord Stannis was wary after the murder of John Arryn, but it was imperative that he sail for King's Landing at once with all his power before the Lannisters could march. Ned chose each word with care. When he was done, he signed the letter, "Eddard Stark, Lord of Winterfell, Hand of the King, and Protector of the Realm," blotted the paper, folded it twice, and melted the sealing wax over the candle flame. His regency would be a short one, he reflected, as the wax softened. The new king would choose his own hand. Ned would be free to go home. The thought of Winterfell brought a wan smile to his face. He wanted to hear Bran's laughter once more, to go hawking with Rob, to watch Rickon at play. He wanted to drift off to a dreamless sleep in his own bed with his arms wrapped tight around his lady, Catelyn. Cain returned, as he was pressing the direwolf's seal down into the soft white wax. Desmond was with him, and between them, Littlefinger. Ned thanked his guards and sent them away. Lord Petyr was clad in a blue velvet tunic with puff sleeves, his silvery cape patterned with mockingbirds. "I suppose congratulations are in order," he said as he seated himself. Ned scowled. "The king lies wounded and near to death." "I know," Littlefinger said. "I also know that Robert has named you Protector of the Realm." Ned's eyes flicked to the king's letter on the table before him, its seal unbroken. "And how is it you know that, my lord?" "Varys hinted as much," Littlefinger said, "and you have just confirmed it." Ned's mouth twisted in anger. "Damn Varys and his little birds! Catelyn spoke truly. The man has some black art. I do not trust him." "Excellent, your learning," Littlefinger leaned forward. "Yet I'll wager you did not drag me here in the black of night to discuss the eunuch." "No," Ned admitted. "I know the secret John Arryn was murdered to protect. Robert will leave no true-born son behind him. Joffrey and Tommen are Jaime Lannister's bastards, born of his incestuous union with the Queen." Littlefinger lifted an eyebrow. "Shocking," he said, in a tone that suggested he was not shocked at all. "The girl as well. No doubt. So when the king dies, the throne by rights passes to Lord Stannis, the elder of Robert's two brothers." Lord Petyr stroked his pointed beard as he considered the matter. "So it would seem, unless, my lord, there's no seeming to this, Stannis is the heir, nothing can change that." "Stannis cannot take the throne without your help. If you're wise, you'll make certain Joffrey succeeds." Ned gave him a stony stare. "Have you no shred of honour?" "Oh, a shred, surely," Littlefinger replied negligently. "Hear me out. Stannis is no friend of yours, nor of mine. Even his brothers can scarcely stomach him. The man is iron, hard and unyielding. He'll give us a new hand and a new council for a certainty. No doubt he'll thank you for handing him the crown, but he won't love you for it, and his ascent will mean war. Stannis cannot rest easy on the throne until Cersei and her bastards are dead. Do you think Lord Tywin will sit idly while his daughter's head is measured for a spike? Castle Rock will rise, and not alone. Robert found it in him to pardon men who serve King Aerys, so long as they did him fealty. Stannis is less forgiving. He will not have forgotten the siege of Storm's End, and the lords Tyrell and Redwine dare not. Every man who fought beneath the Dragon Banner, or rose with Balon Greyjoy, will have good cause to fear. Seat Stannis on the Iron Throne, and I promise you, the realm will bleed. Now look on the other side of the coin. Joffrey is but 12, and Robert gave you the regency, my lord. You are the hand of the king, and protector of the realm. The power is yours, Lord Stark. All you need do is reach out and take it. Make your peace with the Lannisters, release the imp, wed Joffrey to your Sansa, wed your younger girl to Prince Tommen, and your heir to Marcella. It will be 4 years before Joffrey comes of age. By then, he will look to you as a second father. And if not, well, 4 years is a good long while, my lord. Long enough to dispose of Lord Stannis. Then should Joffrey prove troublesome, we can reveal his little secret and put Lord Renly on the throne. We? Ned repeated. Littlefinger gave a shrug. You'll need someone to share your burdens. I assure you my price would be modest. Your price? Ned's voice was ice. Lord Baelish, what you suggest is treason. Only if we lose. You forget, Ned told him. You forget John Aaron, you forget Jorry Cassell, and you forget this. He drew the dagger and laid it on the table between them, a length of dragon bone and Valyrian steel, as sharp as the difference between right and wrong, between true and false, between life and death. They sent a man to cut my son's throat, Lord Baelish. Littlefinger sighed. I fear I did forget, my lord. Pray forgive me. For a moment I did not remember that I was talking to a Stark. His mouth quirked. So it will be Stannis and war. It is not a choice. Stannis is the heir.
Far be it from me to dispute the Lord Protector. What would you have of me, then? Not my wisdom, for a certainty.
I shall do my best to forget your wisdom, Ned said, with distaste. I called you here to ask for the help you promised Catelyn. This is a perilous hour for all of us. Robert has named me Protector, true enough, but in the eyes of the world, Joffrey is still his son and heir. The Queen has a dozen knights and 100 men-at-arms that will do whatever she commands, enough to overwhelm what remains of my own household guard. And for all I know, her brother Jaime may be riding for King's Landing even as we speak, with a Lannister host at his back.
And you, without an army?
Littlefinger toyed with a dagger on the table, turning it slowly with a finger. There is small love lost between Lord Renly and the Lannisters. Bronzion Royce, Sir Balon Swan, Sir Loris, Lady Tender, and the Red Wine Twins. Each of them has a retinue of knights and sworn swords here at court. Renly has 30 men in his personal guard, the rest even fewer. It is not enough. Even if I could be certain that all of them will choose to give me their allegiance, I must have the gold cloaks. The city watch is 2,000 strong, sworn to defend the castle, the city, and the king's peace.
Ah, but when the queen proclaims one king and hand another, whose peace do they protect?
Lord Petar flicked at the dagger with his finger, setting it spinning in place. Round and round it went, wobbling as it turned. When at last it slowed to a stop, the blade pointed at Littlefinger.
Why, there's your answer, he said, smiling. They follow the man who pays them.
He leaned back and looked Ned full in the face, his grey-green eyes bright with mockery.
You wear your honour like a suit of armour, Stark. You think it keeps you safe, but all it does is weigh you down and make it hard for you to move. Look at you now. You know why you summoned me here. You know what you want to ask me to do. You know it has to be done, but it's not honourable. So the words stick in your throat.
Ned's neck was rigid with tension. For a moment he was so angry that he did not trust himself to speak. Littlefinger laughed.
I ought to make you sad, but that would be cruel. So have no fear, my good lord. For the sake of the love I bear for Catelyn, I will go to Janus Slint this very hour and make certain the city watch is yours. 6,000 gold pieces should do it. A third for the commander, a third for the officers, a third for the men. We might be able to buy them for half that much, but I prefer not to take chances. Smiling, he plucked up the dagger and offered it to Ned, hilt first.
John was breaking his fast on apple cakes and blood sausage when Samwell Tarly plopped himself down on the bench.
"I've been summoned to the Sept," Sam said in an excited whisper. "They're passing me out of training. I'm to be made a brother with the rest of you. Can you believe it?" "No, truly, truly. I'm to assist Maester Aemon with the library and the birds. He needs someone who can read and write letters."
"Oh, you'll do well at that," John said, smiling. Sam glanced about anxiously.
"Is it time to go? I shouldn't be late. They might change their minds."
He was fairly bouncing as they crossed the weed-strewn courtyard. The day was warm and sunny. Rivulets of water trickled down the sides of the wall, so the ice seemed to sparkle and shine. Inside the sept, the great crystal caught the morning light as it streamed through the south-facing window and spread it in a rainbow on the altar. Pip's mouth dropped open when he caught sight of Sam, and Toad poked Gren in the ribs, but no one dared say a word. Sept and Celadar were swinging a censer, filling the air with fragrant incense that reminded John of Lady Stark's little sept in Winterfell. For once the septon seemed sober. The high officers arrived in a body, Maester Aemon leaning on Clydus, Sir Alistair, cold-eyed and grim, Lord Commander Mormont, resplendent in a black-wool doublet with silvered bear-claw fastenings. Behind them came the senior members of the three orders, Red-faced Bowen Marsh, the Lord Steward, First Builder Othel Jarvik, and Sir Jeremy Riker, who commanded the Rangers in the absence of Benjen Stark. Mormont stood before the altar, the rainbow shining on his bald head. "You came to us outlaws," he began, "poachers, rapers, debtors, killers and thieves. You came to us children. You came to us alone, in chains, with neither friends nor honor. You came to us rich, or you came to us poor. Some of you bear the names of proud houses, others have only bastards' names, or no names at all. It makes no matter, all that is past now. On the wall, we are all one house. At evenfall, as the sun sets, and we face the gathering night, you shall take your vows. From that moment, you will be a sworn brother of the Night's Watch. Your crimes will be washed away, your debts forgiven. So, too, you must wash away your former loyalties. Put aside your grudges. Forget old wrongs and old loves alike. Here, you begin anew. A man of the Night's Watch lives his life for the realm. Not for a king, nor a lord, nor the honor of this house or that house. Neither for gold, nor glory, nor a woman's love, but for the realm and all the people in it. A man of the Night's Watch takes no wife and fathers no sons. Our wife is duty, our mistress is honor, and you are the only sons we shall ever know. You have learned the words of the vow. Think carefully before you say them. For once you have taken the black, there is no turning back. The penalty for desertion is death. The old bear paused for a moment before he said, Are there any among you who wish to leave our company? If so, go now, and no one shall think the less of you. No one moved. Well and good, said Mormont. You may take your vows here, at evenfall, before Septon Celadar and the first of your order. Do any of you keep to the old gods? John stood. I do, my lord. I expect you will want to say your words before a heart tree, as your uncle did, Mormont said. Yes, my lord, John said. The guards of the Sept had nothing to do with him. The blood of the first men flowed in the veins of the Starks. He heard Gren whispering beside him. There's no Godswood here, is there? I never saw a Godswood. You wouldn't see a herd of oryx until they trampled you into the snow, Pip whispered back. I would so, Gren insisted. I'd see them a long way off. Mormont himself confirmed Gren's doubts. Castle Black has no need of a Godswood. Beyond the wall, the haunted forest stands as it stood in the Dawn Age, long before the Andals brought the Seven across the narrow sea. You will find a grove of weirwoods half a league from this spot, and mayhap your guards as well. My lord! The voice made John glance back in surprise. Samwell Tarly was on his feet. The fat boy wiped his sweaty palms against his tunic.
Might I go as well? To say my words at this art tree?
Does Hastali keep the old gods too?
Mormont asked.
No, my lord,
Sam replied in a thin, nervous voice. The high officers frightened him, John knew, and the old bear most of all.
I was named in the Light of the Seven at the Sept on Horn Hill, as my father was, and his father, and all the Tidies for 1,000 years.
Why would you forsake the gods of your father and your house? Wondered Sir Jeremy Riker.
The Night's Watch is my house now, Sam said. The Seven have never answered my prayers. Perhaps the old gods will.
As you wish, boy, Mormont said.
Sam took his seat again, as did John.
We have placed each of you in an order as befits our need and your own strengths and skills.
Burnmarsh stepped forward and handed him a paper. The Lord Commander unrolled it and began to read.
Halder, to the builders,
he began. Halder gave a stiff nod of approval.
Grin, to the rangers. Albert, to the builders. Pippa, to the rangers.
Pip looked over at John and wiggled his ears.
Samwell, to the stewards.
Sam sagged with relief, mopping at his brow with a scrap of silk.
Mathar, to the rangers. Darian, to the stewards. Todder, to the rangers. John, to the stewards.
The stewards? For a moment John could not believe what he had heard. Mormont must have read it wrong. He started to rise to open his mouth to tell him there had been a mistake, and then he saw Sir Alistair studying him, eyes shiny as two flakes of obsidian, and he knew. The old bear rolled up the paper.
Your first will instruct you in your duties. May all the gods preserve you, brothers.
The Lord Commander favored them with a half bow and took his leave. Sir Alistair went with him, a thin smile on his face. John had never seen the master-at-arms look quite so happy.
Rangers with me,
Sir Jeremy Riker called when they had gone. Pip was staring at John as he got slowly to his feet. His ears were red. Gren, grinning broadly, did not seem to realize that anything was amiss. Matt and Toad fell in beside them, and they followed Sir Jeremy from the sept.
Builders,
announced lantern-jawed Uthel Yarwick. Halder and Albeck trailed out after him. John looked around him in sick disbelief. Maester Aemon's blind eyes were raised towards the light he could not see. The septon was arranging crystals on the altar. Only Sam and Darian remained on the benches, a fat boy, a singer, and him. Lord Steward Burnmarsh rubbed his plump hands together.
Samwell, you will assist Maester Aemon in the rookery and library. Chet is going to the kennels to help with the hounds. You shall have a cell so as to be close to the Maester night and day. I trust we'll take good care of him. He's very old and very precious to us.
Darian, I am told that you sang at many a high lord's table and shared their meat and mead. We are sending you to East Watch. It may be your parrot will be some help to cut her pike when merchant galleys come trading. We are paying too dear for salt beef and pickled fish, and the quality of the olive oil we've been getting has been frightful. Present yourself to Borkus when you arrive. He will keep you busy between ships.
Marsh turned his smile on John.
Lord Commander Mormont has requested you for his personal steward, John. You'll sleep in a cell beneath his chambers in the Lord Commander's tower.
And what will my duties be? John asked sharply. Will I serve the Lord Commander's meals, help him fasten his clothes, fetch hot water for his bath?
Certainly. Marsh frowned at John's tone. And you will run his messages, keep a fire burning in his chambers, change his sheets and blankets daily, and do all else that the Lord Commander might require of you.
Do take me for a servant?
No,
Master Aemon said, from the back of the sept. Clydus helped him stand.
We took you for a man of night's watch.